Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit. And I guess I'm getting all pumped up. Usually at this phase of the game, I talk about the upcoming guest for the week. I prep you guys a little bit on who's going to be on the show. The last time I actually did this myself, Mariel Hemingway was on the pod. She was incredible. Just so fascinating to hear about her life. And then, as many of you know, I have been out and down, literally at the bottom of the earth in South America. Actually, not South America, the South Pole. And I was on Antarctica. And down in Antarctica, I was climbing this crazy mountain called Vincent Massif, which was my sixth of the seven summits. I finally made my way down there. And so in my absence, a great guy, a guy that produces the show, Pete Turner, he took my place. You may have heard his voice the last couple weeks for the other pods that I had previously recorded in the past. And so he did all the intros. But this week, I decided that I was going to do a solo cast. And so the reason why I was giggling at the front of the show is because I said this is going to be an incredible interview, and I'm essentially interviewing myself. So the reason why I'm doing this is because I recently, I'll get into this a little bit later in the pod, but I recently hired a firm to help me really elevate and amplify what I'm trying to do. A lot of it around trying to raise money and awareness for the Waterboy organization, to also help monetize some of the things I'm trying to do now. And so they said, look, Mark, you've had this incredible journey that has a lot of people have not been able to live. I've never thought about it that way necessarily because it's my life, right? All you guys out there, you have your own life and, you know, things have connected you to certain things you've done based on influence, mentors, whatever. And it's really no different for me. But, you know, I do admit some of the things I've been able to experience are unique and special. And so they really encouraged me to really almost like do this audio diary of where I have been and where I'm at and kind of where I'm going in life. And so what I wanted to do is share a lot of those things that have taken me on this journey. It's been a crazy journey. And the best place to start is kind of where this whole thing started really about 7 years ago. And many of you have heard bits and pieces of this, but I wanted to collect it to kind of all in one spot and then move forward in a way that made sense and kind of the chronology of how this whole thing has played out. And it truly has been amazing for me, at least, on the way that it has evolved. So let's go back about 7 years, and really, actually, I can go back about 10 years. And, you know, I was going through a tough time with my ex. We're on good terms now, but, you know, this is somebody I've been married to for 24 years. I'd known her for 30. I knew her since she was 19, and she's a good person. But sometimes just life takes, you know, different paths, and people grow apart. And I think that we were in Seattle, and things seemed to be going fairly well up there for us. Our kids were in schools. Of course, they were younger. I think they were going to be in eighth grade and then in fifth grade. And it just came to a point where she wanted to go back down to Los Angeles and pursue her career in acting. She'd done extremely well back in the day. And then when we had our first child, Claudette, she was 1 year old, we decided to move back to Seattle and go back into my old neighborhood, Lowerhurst, and kind of resume that life. And, you know, like I think a lot of dynamic women that are out there, you just get to a place where there's more than just raising your kids. And I certainly understood that. And so we ended up moving down to Santa Monica, California. And it was a place where it was hard. It was so hard because we went from this beautiful house in Laurelhurst. We owned it, and then we found ourselves renting in this townhome, and it just was not comfortable. And then it was kind of a last minute scramble to get the kids in school, and so that's what we did. And so it was kind of this, you know, Hail Mary, get down there, see what happens. And we did the best that we could. I started a consulting company, and I got work fairly quickly, which was good. And then my ex, you know, started pursuing her acting thing again. And I got to tell you, probably, you know, we would assume this, but for a woman going into her 50s, it's pretty tough in Hollywood to make a living if you don't have an established name. And in her case, she'd been out of the game, you know, for, you know, over 10 years. So it was hard. And then the other thing that made it hard for me in particular is that I had been, you know, born and raised in Seattle, went to the big city high school, Roosevelt, then went on to the University of Washington to play football. And things went well there. I was in a fraternity, the Fiji House. In the Fiji House, have many, many just amazing friends still today. We're very tight. And so left all that, went down to California, really had no friends. And so when you're going through a tough time in terms of the relationship and everything else, it just makes it really difficult when you don't have people that you can rely on and go out and maybe get a beer or something that you can get some of these feelings out. And so found myself in a very lonely place. And so every night I would walk with my awesome chocolate lab, Theo, around this big square block that we lived on. And I just kept asking myself, how did I get here? How did I get here? And it's just like I kept saying, you know, like I felt committed in the marriage, didn't want that to dissolve. Family was so important to me. Yet at the same time, it was just a situation where it just was empty. We weren't connecting, and I just didn't know what to do. And so this went on for, as I said, a couple of years. And I don't even know what the night was. I can't remember if you know, there's like a northern light situation or a plane flew overhead or what. But again, I was walking my chocolate lab around the block, and I was used to saying the same question. I kind of got to that final point, that frustration point where many of us get to. And I just said, you know, I am sick and tired of this, and I do not want this to go on any longer. It can't. Treading water for me is not a good place. And so I changed the mindset. I changed the question. And rather than say, you know, how did I get here and dwell on that, I decided to change to what am I going to do about it? And it seemed like at that particular point, it just like every single thing in my heart, my body, my soul, everything shifted. And it rather than focus on the negative, everything went towards the positive and possibilities. And so one of the things that I wanted to do, and I was still committed in the relationship, but one of the things I wanted to do was pick out some kind of big, hairy, audacious goals and put it out there. It's called a BHAG. And put it out there and try to figure out something athletically I could do that would be just great and phenomenal. And so obviously I couldn't go back and play football in my days. You know, I'm over the hill, of course. I think I still have one more play in me, but I probably don't. So I was trying to figure out like what just a like big thing that I could do if I just put it out there. And so my wheels started to spin. I started to kind of get my energy back. And growing up in Seattle, a very mountainous community, as many of you know who've been up there or who are living there right now. And I had probably climbed, there's one mountain up there, it's called Tiger Mountain. I've been on top of that thing at least 150 times. I grew up idolizing some of the mountain ears that were there that became fairly famous. The Whitaker brothers, Jim and Lou, who actually I know Lou now, who's on the podcast, Ed Veesters and many others. And so I did some research and I found out that no NFL player had ever climbed the seven summits. And so it just seemed like too good to be true. And I said to myself at that point, walking around the block in Santa Monica, like, I am going to be that guy. And I pointed my arrow in that direction. And then all of a sudden, rather than focus on the relationship and how things were going south and everything else, I put all this energy into what it was going to take, figure out the roadmap of how do you actually go about climbing the seven summits. And so I knew a guy named Phil Ursler, and Phil's a guy that runs a company called IMG, International Mountain Guides. And so this is a professional mountain guide service that takes people all over the world Phil himself and his wife have actually climbed the seven summits. He's guided them many times. And so I put in a call to him. I was actually on a family vacation. Turned out to be the last one for the family. It was kind of a bummer. But I was in up in Georgetown. I went down into the lobby and made the call to Phil and said, "Hey, Phil, this is Mark." And he knew me. And I said, "Look, this is my goal. This is what I want to do. And can you help me achieve it? How do I get there?" And so we spent 1 hour on the phone. And he went through every single thing of where I should start. And really, it was about difficulty. It was about altitude. It was about really increasing your knowledge as it relates to what you need to know on these mountains as they get progressively harder. And of course, the last one I was going to do, I wanted to do, was Mount Everest. And so Mount Everest and some of these other ones, which I'll talk about, it just, I knew it was going to take just a load of knowledge, and I was going to have to up my game. I'd been on Whitney, which is the second highest peak in North America, down in California, mid-California by Mammoth Mountain. I'd climbed Mount Rainier, but I had never spent a whole lot of time in terms of the technical stuff with crampons and a harness and tying ropes and knots and everything else that you need to know when you start taking on these bigger mountains. So it was great. So that's how the whole mountain thing came around. And that's how I got into this thing in the first place. And it's just amazing that as I get going here in terms of other things that have come, that the all the gifts that have come my way as I sit here 7 years later, I would have never thought or dreamed that there could have been so many things that would have come my way. But, you know, you got to put yourself out there. And that's what I think a lot of people, they freeze, they let fear grip them, and they don't step through it. And there's only one way to go through difficult situations, and that is through the center. You can't run from it. It always catches up with you, and that's what I had to do. And as hard as it was, I would never wish that on anybody. It did turn out to be a gift. Also, at that same time, my dad, who I was very tight with, the greatest guy ever, the best father, died of a massive stroke. He had this crazy stroke, and it absolutely took out his whole communication grid. And when that happened, month one, we were down at Swedish, which is one of the leading hospitals out of Seattle. And this happened. We're all in shock, but now there's possibilities. Kind of month two, we moved him out. We put him in a home. And then we're trying the rehab thing. And then as we're starting to enter month three, we knew there was just no turnaround. This was not going to happen. My dad, even though he couldn't communicate, knew he was really screwed. My dad and I had talked about this type of situation in the years past when things were good. And we just said, look, if either one of us were ever in that type of situation, pull the plug. And that's not any kind of quality of life. And so essentially he had a heart attack on almost month three. And, you know, they did not revive him. And I think that is a blessing as I sit here today. He just left a great legacy. He lived 80 years old. You know, that's the way it played. But, you know, you combine those two things, going through a tough time with your now ex and a divorce, and it's just emotional toll. And then you add on top of that, you're in a place where you don't have any friends. It was not fun whatsoever. So let me move into the mountains. And I'm going to kind of go through these things as they happened. You know, maybe you'll find these things fascinating or not. But the journey has just, as I said, been incredible. So the first mountain I went to and that Phil Urschler had recommended to me was Mount Kilimanjaro. And so something I'd never done, even though this sounds pretty simple, is, you know, considering you're flying all the way to Tanzania, Africa, I'd never really flown by myself before. I'd flown a zillion times, but never that far, and kind of a lot of unknowns and those things. And so I literally landed in the middle of the night. I went through their little kind of goofy customs that they had in a town called Arusha. and there was a guy holding a sign, and then I jumped in his car. Off we went into the night, literally pitch black roads. Drove for an hour, and then as we entered Arusha, we took a left down this old dirt road. Didn't know if I was with the right guy, the wrong guy. And as we pulled into this hotel, they had to open these gates. There were two guys there with machine guns. And I was like, oh my gosh, where have I got myself into? And so the thing, and I'm not going to drag out every single mountain, but the one thing that was really amazing to me that happened was I had trained for the mountain. I was ready to go. I was in good physical condition. And probably for the first 5 or 6 days, I was always out in front of the pack. There were three other Brits that were there, and I'd always usually get to camp an hour or so before the other guys had pulled in. Felt great. And then on summit day, we started around 15,500 feet, and once again, I took off out of camp, and I got probably a good hour in front of everybody else. They put a porter with me. And all of a sudden, I just absolutely lost all my energy. Didn't know what to do. Sat down. I felt like just going, curling up and going to sleep. And this porter turned around, and he was just like looking at me. He took some protein bars out, jammed them in my mouth. He literally was slapping me in the face, pushing me in the chest, trying to get me going, trying to rehydrate me. And so ultimately, I got up and started climbing again up the mountain. And finally made the peak at 19,341 feet. And the thing that was amazing is not so much hitting that peak, but as we were coming off the face, and it's definitely a rim of a volcano when you're up on top there. And as I was coming off, all of a sudden I just started bursting out in tears. Now, you got to understand that I grew up, you know, football guy, always around the fellas, locker room, all that stuff. And I don't think I'd cried since I was like 11. It was just absolutely uncontrollable. And, you know, I'm here today to admit that it's not a big deal anymore. But at the time, it's just like I didn't understand about guys trying to be vulnerable. And it made me like rethink all the things I was going through. Was it really that important for me to put up that kind of shield? And the answer was no. And also, it also metaphorically helped at me as I climbed this mountain. I struggled and then made it to the top. And then it just seemed, and it felt like at that time as it was coming down, like, hey, look at, you know, I've gone through some tough stuff, and I know that if I can make it through this, meaning my situation, my personal situation, and my dad dying, and my, you know, this relationship, issues with my ex, then I can make it through anything. And it really gave me, it empowered me. And it made me think that, you know, hey, this is something. I've flown to a different company or country. I'm with all these different people. And I'm learning all these new things, and I struggled, and now I've made it. And it just put me on the right path of positivity in terms of I can really, do anything if I set my mind to it. And so the next mountain, the next year, now we're talking, the first one in Kili was 2013. Now we go on to 2014. And so the next mountain on the roadmap was Mount Elbrus, which is located in the Caucasus Mountains down in Russia. Now, how often do any of us go to Russia, right? I flew into Moscow, then on to St. Petersburg, and hung there for 3 or 4 days. And then from there, it was kind of a trains, planes, and automobiles. And just seeing the infrastructure of Russia, and it just didn't seem like, you know, all their bravado that they have about how strong and powerful they are really matched what was going on, you know, within the country in terms of things being broken down and cows and sheep and everything else running across the road. But that was a very interesting mountain because there was still a lot of conflict going on. In that time, in 2014, the Russians had shut down a jet. And so there's a lot of, I think, neighboring Georgia. And there was just a lot of people on edge. And then as we climbed, everything was going great and the weather was perfect. And we woke up on this morning and it seemed like everything was good. The sunrise was coming up. We've got these beautiful shots as we're climbing up the mountain, and that mountain is 18,000 and change, and as we got towards about probably 17,000 feet, this big white out clouds and snow and everything else came in, and we could not see. And then we got to the top. It was a struggle a little bit. I could only see about 10 feet in front of me. A lot of people were very scared. And we finally made it at the top, yahoo, but now we want to get off. And of course, you're above the tree line. And as we were coming down, we got into this electrical storm. And the thing that was crazy about that is you could literally feel all the hairs on the back of your neck just rising straight up. And it was scary. It was scary because there was no place to run and hide. And so, you know, we were just like, we got to get down the mountain now. And we got to get down to about 14 or 15,000 feet. And there was a little shack we had camped out in, and definitely needed to get there, you know, as soon as possible. And unfortunately, there was somebody who wasn't part of our climbing party, but somebody got zapped by the lightning and died on the saddle, kind of right at the base of where you start to head up. You know, sad day, but it's just, you know, those things in mountaineering happened, and definitely glad to have that one behind me. So now we move on to 2015. And about this time, through my relationship, we had decided to part ways, and we did so. This is my ex-wife now, and so, you know, I'd kind of mentally checked out. I think she had checked out, and now it was just very hard time to tell the kids, but we did that. It was painful. It was so hard. I've got a very close relationship, so does she, with the kids, and so to break that whole family unit apart was not fun. And I still consider one of the great failures of my life. And with all this cool stuff that I'm doing, I don't know how to reconcile that, but it is what it is. Best thing I can do is love my kids and tell them that every day, which I do, and communicate with them every day, which I do. Just really try to listen to them and their feelings. And that's what I've had to do to kind of make it through to the other side. So we get into 215, and I decided to, at that point, fly down to Australia. I did the mountain that I call the Fun 7, Mount Kosciuszko. Flew into Sydney, Australia, drove halfway across the country into the snowy mountains. And then we're talking like a one-day climb. It's only just, I think, maybe 8,000 or 9,000 feet. It's not a big deal. It's probably a 10, 12-hour day, but a lot of fun. You know, the Australian people are so great, and they're so loving, and they're so, you know, spontaneous, and, hey, let's grab a shrimp and a barbie and a beer and have a good time. And we did all those things, and I have a few friends down there, so we were able to get together and have some fun. And then from that point, drove down to Melbourne, hung out in that town for a few days, and then flew back to the U.S. from there. So anyways, Mount Kosciuszko, the Fun 7. Next year, really stepped up my game. This is now 2016. I went down to South America and climbed a mountain called Aconcagua. And Aconcagua is a mountain that's just under 23,000 feet. So it was really going to test my ability to be, you know, high in altitude. And I did so all without oxygen. We started with 12 people in the climbing party and ended up only six made it. We were flying people off left and right in the rescue helicopters. Just people, they hadn't trained right, they hadn't prepared right, and their body chemistry just did not allow them to kind of get through that ceiling, that floor, whatever you want to call it, to get up to those higher elevations. So it really tested my strength of going back and forth, and it was really there at 19,500 feet, camped out there. That was their high camp for 3 days. And a couple things happened up there, which really kind of changed the game again. And that was, now I was kind of on my way out of my relationship. I wasn't feeling the burden as I once was. I work in social media, or I work in media, in digital media. And so I have some knowledge of what it takes to build social platforms and things like that. And I said, you know, I'm very confident that I'm going to make this mountain. I'm going to take the top, and now I will have 4 of the 7 under my belt. And I said, you know, if someday I get to the point where I'm close to doing Everest, I want to build a social following, because I know it's all about reach. And if I have any possibility of ever getting a sponsor of any kind of range, then I need to be able to show that I've got this social following. You know, I understand what I am. I'm a, you know, mid-50 guy, climbing mountains, former NFL player, trying to be the first guy that's ever done that. But, you know, the people that they are sponsoring are more the, the athletes of today that are 22, 23, 24. And I get that. I understand it. And so, again, it's all about reach. And so after I climbed that mountain, I take the top. I came back and I opened a Instagram and Facebook, Twitter fan pages. And so it's been amazing. Essentially what I've done, there's been really no magic to it, but it's a very niche audience that I appeal to, but it's just outdoor, having fun, being in these different mountains, aligning myself with different brands that I believe in, nutrition that I follow, that I use myself to fuel my way up these different mountains. That's what I post every day, and it's a daily discipline. And where most people fall off the bus is that they do it for a couple weeks or a couple months, and then they just stop posting. And I literally have been religious pretty much all the way through, 7 days a week, with the exception of when I'm on these big mountains and I'm out of cell range. And so what that has led to is now I have an audience of over 300,000 a couple years later. I'm sitting here. It's just been amazing to see that many people that interested in what I'm doing. But it's also led to a couple other things, which I'll get back to here in a minute. So now we move on to 2017. And one of the mountains I'd heard a lot about, it's pretty scary, it's pretty tough. A lot of people compare it with Everest without the altitude, and that's Denali. And so I call this Denali 1. And Denali 1 was a tough trip. It's hard. The mountain is very unpredictable. The size of the Alaskan National, Denali National Park, is larger than the state of Massachusetts. So it's just enormous. And just to get in there, you have to fly on a little plane. And you can only leave this little town called Taknita if the pilots can actually see where they're going. And so we took off, and the whole trip from the time that we left to the time that we came back, it was just marked by just unpredictable weather, storms coming in. One night we had, I think, 12 inches come down in about 4 hours, just massive amounts of snow, having to build snow walls, heavy wind, a lot of things. We had some bad teammates on that expedition as well. But the bottom line is we did not make the top. We ran into a situation where there was this lenticular cloud that was sitting on top that was hovering at around minus 40 or 50 degrees below zero, and there was a superstorm on the way. And so we were trying to wait for a break in the weather, and it just never happened. And we got up as high as 16,200 feet. And that was it. And so ultimately, we decided to call it, come back. And it was frustrating because you're paying, money for these different outfitters to take you and to go through that and prepare and train and everything else. But you know what? Mother Nature won that round. And that's all that matters, really, is that you got to think about your fingers and toes, your family and your friends, and what is most important in life. And as important as it is to me to take the top, it's not important to take my life or those other things on my body. And so decided to come back and just pack it in. So that later that year, though, which was super cool, I got invited. And this is, again, this goes back to building the social audience. And now I was starting to get some momentum. And I probably had 40 or 50,000 people, social following between, in particular, Instagram, at NFL27 Summits, which is both my Facebook fan page and my Instagram and Twitter handle. Chris Long, who is Howie Long's son, who played at the time for the New England Patriots, started a foundation about 4 years ago now called Water Boys. And essentially what they do is they raise money and awareness for the people down in Tanzania of the Maasai tribe, which is located out in the Serengeti. And so the whole idea was to invite six former NFL players, my best friend Jim Mora, former UCLA coach and longtime NFL coach, was on the trip as well. And then we had four Green Berets. Three of them had been wounded. I think two were amputees, and then one was blind. And so we all, the goal was to raise money, and then, which we did. Actually, Jim and I raised $47,000. We funded our own well, which was super cool. They actually put a plaque on the village that we funded with my dad's name. This Water Boys wants to dedicate this well to Buddy Patterson, which is my dad. and I look forward to someday going down and visiting that particular tribe. But, you know, we went down there, we raised the money. It was such a rewarding experience. It really showed and taught me about not just giving, but participating and seeing those people. When we walked into those villages, we were treated like flipping rock stars, man. We were the Beatles. And it was all just so people could go over and cut the ribbon and then turn on the spigot and this little thing called water would come out. Can you imagine that? And the reason why they do that and the reason why it's so important is because most of the time these girls have to go down. And this podcast is brought to you by Laird Superfoods. Let me tell you, these creamers are so amazing. They're super tasty, super delicious. And what they are is whole natural food ingredients mixed into these creamers. And I'm telling you, when you put this stuff into your drink, this powder substance, it is amazing. And their whole tagline is all about fueling your journey. You cannot go and actually power your way up a mountain, be in the pool, ride a big wave, unless you're properly fueled. And these guys are doing it all the right way. So where can you find this? At LairdSuperfood.com. And here's the kicker. If you use the code name Mark P20, that's Mark P20, you're going to get 20% off on your first order. So check it out, LairdSuperfood.com. And the reason why they do that and the reason why it's so important is because most of the time these girls have to go down and put these 5-gallon buckets on their head, walk 2 or 3 miles to the river, and it's disgusting. Animals attack them. They get raped. You know, it's just all this bad stuff. And so a father, which is me with two daughters, you know, it was very important for me to be involved in this project. And I think the original goal was to have 32 wells funded. And now Chris has funded, I think, 55. He and both Nate Boyer, both those guys have been on the pod as well. But anyways, it was just a really amazing project to be involved in. And so even though I didn't tag Denali again in 2017, I was able to go down and participate with Water Boys back down my second time, Kilimanjaro, take the top again, and made it back safely. Okay. I just had a little slurp of vino as I continue the solo cast. Okay, so brings us to 2018, Denali 2. This last year, I decided to change it up a little bit, and I went with a new climbing group, Alpine Ascents. It turned out to be a fantastic gang to be with. And we had just complete opposite experience as we did in 2017. The weather was magnificent from day one all the way to day 17. We take the top on June 7th. It was incredible. Felt great. Denali, you're talking about carrying 140 pounds up the mountain between your backpack and your sled. You're going up these big 800-foot ice walls, climbing over crevasses, and doing some pretty dangerous stuff. And you really need the weather to cooperate and have all the things going in your favor, which we did. We did have somebody, a couple people, fall a number of times, and one guy fell into a crevasse 20 feet deep. We had to dig him out. But beyond that, didn't happen to me. It didn't happen to my rope mate, Koki. You know, it was very successful. And I got to tell you, you know, as I was going up through there, I kept saying to myself, I am so Jack that I'm here, and I hope to God that I actually make it to the top, because I never want to come back. It's painful and it's hard and it's demanding, and it takes a lot of mental strength to make that happen. And so anyways, 217 Denali, that is under my belt. Now we go to the mountain I just came off, Vincent Massif down in Antarctica. And we're talking about coming back from the South Pole. I think I said South America at first. It's the South Pole. The only thing there that lives down there are penguins. Can you imagine that? There's not a frog. There's not a green leaf. There's not a blade of grass. There's not a butterfly. Nothing. No bug. Nothing lives down there. It is so cold. The other thing that's crazy about it is that this time of year, it's opposite seasons from the States, and it's their summertime down there, and so the sun literally never goes down. So I was trying to power my cell phone, not to make any calls because you can't, but to take photos, and I had full solar charging going on at 2 a.m. in the morning. I mean, in full, you know, sun's just blaring out. But we had great weather. We had a great team. Again, Alpine Ascents, I went with this famous guide, mountaineer, Vern Tejas. And we made it to the top. They call that mountain the shorter, colder version of Denali. And you're still carrying a lot of weight. You still have to fly in. Weather can be temperamental. It probably got as cold as minus 35. One of the guys happened to be my temp mate, ended up getting frostbite on his nose. That turned black and two thumbs. He lost three fingers last year on Denali. And so, I don't know. I wish him all the best. But he's taking on Everest here in the next couple months. So hopefully he'll come back with all his digits back on his fingers, the one he's leaving with, because he already lost three. But we'll see how that goes. So at this point in time, now I move on to Mount Everest. And so I've got essentially 14 months to figure out a lot of things, who I'm going to go with, how that's going to look, and then double down in terms of the amount of training that I'm going to be doing here in Sun Valley. So taking another shift. So that's been the journey in terms of the mountains, and I can honestly say it's been the journey. The summit is great. Coming down, you know, is always important, but it's all the people you meet along the way, the experiences. Can you imagine that? Seven different continents. Well, I've actually been in six continents, but everyone, all these different countries, all these different people, all these different nationalities. And if I hadn't stepped kind of, again, into the fear and some of the tough things that I was going through at the time, I would have never sat here today with, you know, one mountain to go saying, you know, amazing, I've made it this far and all the things I've been able to experience. So back in 2017, there's a guy named Yogi Roth. Now, Yogi is a great dude. He's a guy I've known for a while through UCLA football. He's a guy that is a announcer for the Pac-12 networks, and he had heard about my story trying to become the first NFL player to climb the seven summits. And so Yogi called me up and said, "Hey, Mark, I'd love to come over and do a podcast on you." I'd never really listened to podcasts, didn't know that much about them, didn't even know he had one. And so he's got this great podcast called Life Without Limits. And so he came over, and as we're doing this podcast, and I'm answering all his questions, I had the little voice inside my head. And in that little voice, I was saying to myself, you know, I think I can do this. I know a lot of people. And so after the pod got done and I listened to it, and I realized that I could actually stand the sound of my voice, I was brainstorming with a couple women over at Creative Visions, and Kathy Eldon and her wonderful daughter, Amy. And we just came up with this name called Finding Your Summit. And it just seemed like it really fit for what we're trying to do. You know, again, it's not necessarily about finding your summit, about you have to go climb a mountain to figure out what you're going to do in life. Actually, it really should be called Finding Your Summits, plural. Because I think we all go through these different stages. I mean, I've had a kid phase, and I've had a trying to figure out who I was in grade school. And then you move on to high school, and then you move on to college. And there's my football life, and there's been my business life. And so everybody's got their own circumstances on what that means. But I decided to launch this podcast called Finding Your Summit. And now I am about 92 episodes into it. I think I've taped probably over 100. I've got probably 3 months in the can waiting to go. And it's just been an incredible journey. And I can, at the time, I thought, hey, that'd be really cool to interview people and you know, learn about what they're up to. But, you know, some of the people I've had on the podcast, I mean, we're talking about Kyle Menard. This is a guy who I actually met on Aconcagua. This guy, he's got no arms, no legs. I was sitting on summit day at about 21,000 feet, and all of a sudden this guy's crawling up the mountain. And I thought, you know, gosh, I'm at altitude. I think I must be hallucinating or something. And ultimately, he crawls up right to my feet and looks up, you know, almost like a turtle. And he's like, "What's up, dude?" And I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" And I go, "Are you serious? You're climbing?" And this guy ended up taking the top. Remember, only 6 of 12 made it from our group. And this guy crawled and essentially just made it on his belly, just powering us all the way up. And then and on the other side, I got a chance to talk to him. And ultimately, he came on the pod. And there isn't anything he hasn't been able to do. I've been able to podcast with Eric Weinmeier. This is a guy that's blind. He became blind when he was going into high school. Can you imagine that? Lost all sight. And there's nothing that this guy hasn't done, will do. He's climbed the seven summits. He's kayaked solo down the Colorado River 300 miles. I mean, that's like being in a washer, right? And to kind of hear all his trials and tribulations. And then what he's doing in terms of setting up camps for other kids who are going through similar stuff. It's been super empowering. And then listen to him. I've not only interviewed both Laird Hamilton and Gabby Reese, but been over to their house a couple times and worked out with them in the pool. And, you know, he's the real deal. She's the real deal. And they walk the walk, they talk the talk. And so a big brand in the surfing world, but, you know, he had to overcome a lot of things with his childhood growing up. And now this kind of revolutionary way of training and pool weights. I mean, we literally were in their pool with 35, 40-pound weights going to the bottom of the pool and back up to the top in 12 feet. Depth of water, crazy. And so that's been amazing to meet them. As I mentioned at the very beginning of the pod, I had Muriel Hemingway. She is a longtime Ketchum resident here in Sun Valley. And she has gone through seven suicides in her family. So to sit here in my home with her, she's been in 30-plus movies, been nominated for both Academy and Golden Globe Awards many years ago, still continues to act, did a documentary called Running from Crazy. It's just amazing to listen to her story and what she had to go through. And we think that, you know, people like her have it all together. And, you know, she's just trying to make sure that she doesn't end up on the wrong side of the crazy fence, you know. And then to have a guy like Captain Charles Plum. This guy was one of the guys who I interviewed early on, and he spent 6.5 years in a Vietnam prison, Hanoi Hilton, as they called it back in the day. But for him to come out, and he has this whole thing about packing your parachute. And he talks about, really relying on others and his team. It's not about I. And very inspirational. I've had my best friend Jim Moore on the pod. You know, he was a longtime NFL and coach for UCLA, and having to go through his adversity. Shelly Smith, cancer survivor, another ESPN reporter, just like Jim. So, you know, the gifts that I've been given to be on this side of the mic have been way more rewarding than I think what the audience or anybody else, because I get to be the lucky guy to hear each and every single one of these stories. And then I don't just show up, right? I do a lot of research on how these things are going to apply. And so I'm really excited about the future and the access that I've been given. And because of my background and what I'm doing today, it seems like it's opened a lot of doors. And, you know, it's I don't know, lucky me. But again, you know, you don't get there if you don't put yourself out there. And, you know, maybe I'm not everybody's favorite podcast, but who cares? It's just been super rewarding, you know, for me and my own therapy in terms of what I've had to overcome and go through to get where I am today. So then as I move through this whole story, this chronology of how this whole thing has played out, I ultimately, last year exactly to this date at this podcast, I bought a home here in Sun Valley, Idaho. And, you know, I had never felt quite settled in California. My roots, my home, my friends, everything was in Seattle. But I just felt like once my kids got off to college, my older daughter went to USC, graduated. And my younger daughter now, Amelia, is at Arizona as a sophomore. And I just felt as though that once they left, and because the way that the internet, FaceTime, texting, all these things are today compared to what they were when I was growing up, which were essentially non-existent outside of a rotary telephone, that, you know, the freedom to move around where I wanted to go was important. And I'd been coming to Sun Valley since I was 19 years old with my college buddies, and we'd ski. I'd do this right before spring ball to come back, be in great shape. And so I just said, you know, there's a realtor that works part-time here, and he had a pocket listing. He said, "Hey, Mark, I've got this house. You should come over and check it out." So I did, and I fell in love with it. It's across the street from the mountain here in Ketchum, West Ketchum. And it was just like, I got to do this. And I just, my heart just felt like this was the right move. And the great thing about change is this, is that you can always change it back. And so, you know I can go back to California. And I was a renter there, and I hated that. And I'd never rent. I was buying homes when I was 23 years old. And for me to be in that rental situation and have somebody else with that thing over my head was very, very, very unsettling. And so to be able to own my own home again, to be able to emerge out of this divorce and back on my feet, and to be able to be literally across the street from the mountain, 7 minutes to the lift, just was super appealing. And so I said, you know what? I'm a mountain guy. I love it. This is where I found my serenity, my peace. And this is where I've really gotten clear on who I am and where I want to go. And I'm going to make this thing happen. And I did. And so I've been here now for, like I said, just under a year. And I've lived through a spring, a summer, a fall, and now I'm going through the dead heat of winter. There's a ton of snow here now. But I'm literally, you know, I think going back to Vincent, I probably was the best prepared I've been on any mountain, partially because I'm living at 5,840 feet. And I'm up on the mountain either hiking. There's a local hike around here called Proctor Mountain, or I skin up to the top. It takes me an hour, 45 minutes. You go up to almost 10,000 feet. And, you know, to have that kind of cardio, you just can't get that in the gym. I mean, can you imagine being on a Stairmaster for an hour and 45 minutes and just getting that kind of sweat? Doesn't happen. So I'm so blessed and thankful that I was able to do that, to move here, to buy a home. And there's been a small community, a lot of Seattle, ex-Seattle people that are here. Many of my buddies have homes here, and they're in and out. And so it's just great to see them. And I'm just, again, very grateful that it's played out the way it is. And then the most recent thing that I've done is I just launched this e-learning course. So on top of the podcast and going back to the social, it's just like, you know, I've had a lot of people reach out to me and say, hey, Mark, you know, it's been really cool what you've done. And it's very, very inspiring to them. And how did you do it? And a lot of these strategies that I learned from my Hall of Fame coach, Don James, and he taught me all about the pyramid of success. And so what I did is I worked with a gal named Deb Klein, and for the last year, literally, we've been chipping away at this whole thing, but writing content and essentially redefining the pyramid of success into something called Summits, which is really an acronym for accomplishment. So the S is the seed, and then you unleash, and you move, you measure, you improve. Things always happen, you diverse, and ultimately, you summit, you have success, and you pay it forward. And so this course is, there's a free PDF to it. There's a free assessment if you want to take it, findingyoursummit.com. And it's a place where I've been able to really put my heart and soul into how I've essentially gotten here, because it wasn't just magic and it didn't just happen, but I really had to tap back into the strategies that got me to the place I am today. And I can tell you from 7 years ago, I'm in a great spot. Just more mentally than anything, because, you know, you cannot fly high when you have that negative weight on your back, and that applies to anybody. So the thing that's been really cool, I keep saying that word, but as I go back to Aconcagua in 2016 and at 19,500 feet, and I started journal writing, and I said, you know, I wanted to create this social audience to try to create some reach. So my podcast now are over 30,000 downloads. Thank you so much for anybody and everybody that has downloaded the podcast and listened to these amazing people tell these incredible stories. But now I'm able to do things like take this e-learning course and jam these things back through, and it just creates an audience, right? I built an audience that's out there that is willing to listen and learn on some of the things, and seems like there's some interest in terms of what's going on. And so as I kind of round third base here and heading home into this podcast, you know, I wanted everybody to know that it definitely hasn't been just one big bowl of cherries, okay? And I work another job, I monetize in a different way, and I do a lot of these things because I love the process. I love the whole art of trying to build something. But at the end of the day, you know, when the lights are off, which are 98% of the time, it's me out there by myself on the mountain doing the hard work. And I just love the process, just no different than Tom Brady. You know, he loves the off season. He loves trying to figure it out. And so do I. But what I also realized, like everybody, like Tom Brady, we all need mentors, we all need coaches, and I'm no different. And I think I've done a pretty good job of starting the podcast and starting the social stuff, and you know, creating a website, markpattisonnfl.com, and I've been public speaking and the e-learning course, all those things. But I can only get those things myself to a certain point. And so I realized a couple months ago that I needed help. I needed my own mentor. I needed somebody I could say, look, at you know, I've done these things, you know, I've gotten them to a certain point, but I need more help to amplify. And again, really with the goal of trying to monetize some of the things that I'm trying to do. You know, other people are doing these things that are climbing mountains, that have social audience, that are doing the things that are passionate to them, and they're monetizing, they're contributing more money towards charities, which I want to do. Again, we talked about Water Boys, and that's something I want to do. And so I hired a PR firm, and it's a short-term thing, and another company that's really helping me with monetizing my podcast, and also to help with some SEO stuff and just strategizing in general. And so one of the things I did right when I got back from Vincent, this is literally like 5 days ago, is I flew down to the Super Bowl and I attended the Radio Row. It's a crazy media day where there are literally tables after tables after tables of every sports station you can think of America there. It was super cool. I got to be a part of this. You know, I got to interview with Cyrus XM, Yahoo Sports, the Raider Radio Network. A bunch of different, probably over 20 different interviews. And really, again, the ultimate goal was just to create awareness. And I don't know where all this is going to go, but I do know, again, I go back to the same point. If you don't step up to the plate, you have at bats, then you'll never get on base ever. And so, and part of that too is the people that you meet along the way. So I'm down in Atlanta, I'm doing all these different, you know, interviews. It was just fantastic. And, you know, now I'm hanging out with some of these old teammates of mine or players I've known for the past, like Hall of Fame kicker Morton Anderson. There's another guy that came by that was on the Water Boys project, Nick Hardwick. He was a center for the San Diego Chargers, now is the voice of the San Diego Chargers. The color guy, Herschel Walker, Michael Irvin, all these other guys. And then I was taken over to the Verizon Center and was going to do something with Yahoo Sports, which I did, and you know, spent some time with Hannah Storm and Andrea Kramer, both ESPN reporters. So again, I mean, where else am I going to be in that position unless I put myself in that position? And that's what I want to encourage everybody out there to do, is that maybe it's not in this space and you're not going to be down in Atlanta at the Super Bowl having that kind of access, but there are other things. You can volunteer for charities, or you can put yourself in positions. But if you don't put yourself out there, then none of these things will happen. And then later that night, I went over to the Hyatt. So we were at the convention center where all the Radio Row stuff was going on. Then I head over to the Hyatt, and there was an NFL PA, Players Association party, that was going on that I attended. And right next door, they were having the Man of the Year nominations. And so all the guys from the 32 teams that were nominated for all the great charity work they're doing within their communities were there. And I happened to run into Chris Long, again, Howie Long's son, the guy that now plays for the Philadelphia Eagles. And he is the guy that started Water Boys along with Nate Boyer. And as it all turned out, you know, he ended up winning the Walter Payton Award for Man of the Year, which is just absolutely incredible for all the amazing work he's doing down in Tanzania. And now he's really spreading that whole word and goal and reach to other places in East Africa. But again, if I hadn't been there, if I hadn't taken the chance, if I hadn't paid my way, not only for myself, but also for my beautiful daughter, Claudette, to come down and participate with me in all this, then I wouldn't have run into Chris. And because I ran into Chris, then we had a conversation about trying to create a Water Boys Everest. So I'm trying to work on that. I'm not sure how that's all going to play out, but it'd be great to be able to replicate something where we're raising money and awareness for people in Africa, or maybe it's Nepal, but the same type of model where we're taking Navy SEALs or Green Berets and ex-NFL guys from Kathmandu up to base camp of Everest. It's a win-win for everybody. So he seemed to be enthusiastic about that. And, you know, obviously, so was I. So anyways, here I sit back in Sun Valley finally after a month, and going back to starting this whole solo cast. I can't believe I've actually talked now for over 50 minutes, and hopefully you've hung in there. And but it has been a journey, and it has been extraordinary for me. And again, I can't imagine what my life would have been like without this. And I know that if I was still in a very unpleasant situation and anchored and I hadn't done something about it, that, man, I don't know if I don't know what would have happened. It would not have been good, though. And I was just down a very downward spiral. And sometimes, you know, you need certain inspiration to pick you up and lift you. And like I said, that one night when I was walking around the block with my chocolate lab, Theo, and I had this like bolt of lightning coming to hit me, and I changed my mindset, really changed the whole game. And from that, now, again, you know, I'm climbing these mountains all over the world. Now we've got Everest. I'm here at my seventh mountain coming up. And by the way, I'm not going to stop. People said, okay, you've got your seven mountains and that's it. And I'm like, no way. The game is just beginning. When you think about how many things you haven't done in your life and that there's opportunities to go do, it just leaves a wide open landscape for things to go and set other goals to accomplish. Another one of the goals, just last thing on goals, is for me to, I really want to climb all 50 of the highest peaks in the U.S. and I've already done four of the hardest ones. You know, I mean, what a great way to see the U.S., right? And again, everyone, every place is going to have its own little journey, and every highest peak and every, you know, county of that particular state is going to have its own journey and how I got there and the people that I got to meet along the way. So I'm very excited about that. I'm also very excited about all the training that's going to go down between now and March of 2020 when I head off for Everest. I'm going to double down. I'm going to train like I've never trained before to make sure I come back safe and sound and to the people that I love and love me. And then all the amazing people that are going to be on the pod, you know, coming around. And probably the most exciting thing, and I hope everybody looks at life like this, is that I have no idea of the opportunities and the people that I'm going to meet in the next 12 months. I have no idea. But I do know that every single day I put energy out towards the universe of trying to make things happen, of trying to knock on doors, kick tires, do all those things. And, you know, most of the time I get pushed back, right? But, you know, there's these certain opportunities, these people, these things, personalities that keep popping up in my life that turn out to be game changers, mentors, inspirations. And that's what's exciting about this journey. So in closing of this podcast, Finding Your Summit, you know, thank you for listening. Thank you for hanging in there. And if you want to find out anything more on my journey, everything can be found at www.markpattisonnfl.com. That's where I am. And I try to keep everything up to date. Please, please, please email me. Reach out to me. You can do so through my website, through any one of my social channels. And I always respond to everybody. I love to engage. I don't have a big team. I did talk about, you know, hiring a couple of these different people, but they don't handle my you know, day-to-day emails and affairs and everything else. They're just there to guide and say, hey, Mark, go meet with this person or that person. And that's it. You know, recommendations for the podcast. If you know somebody out there that should be on this pod, opportunities that come up. You want me to come speak to your school, your organization, whatever. I'd love to do that. I'd love to engage with people. You know, I've been very blessed to be a part of some amazing organizations, coaches, mentors, other players, mountain climbers, and then just people in general. Don't be afraid to reach out. I always respond. Okay. So on that note, that is it for this episode. Again, thank you for hanging in there. Just pumped up about the journey headed in into the future. Please continue to listen to the pods. All right, that's it. Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, Until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.